If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, your source for snarky reality TV recaps from all the networks across the board. No one is off limits as I dissect even the tiniest details of our favorite train wrecks. Be sure to follow up between episodes on Twitter and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. Snark with me and fellow listeners on Facebook in the Reality TV Podcast Orchard of Snark group. And for nitty gritty, unfiltered me, check out bonus episodes at patreon.com/realitytvpod. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Welcome back to another week of sisters and wives and sister wives. And of course, Taco Tony. He's become the mascot for Sister Wives this season, the mascot no one needed nor wanted. But let's just get right down to it, because this episode left all of us lining up to beat those piñatas with the same rage I assigned to the bratty kids that cut in line to rinse off at the sandpit at the pool. You better back it up, because no entitled little brat is going to saunter their way in front of my law-abiding, non-asshole kids. Sorry, not sorry. That sand area is a microcosm for society, I'm telling you, and it's where future douchebags and bitches are bred and born. Okay, so where were we? It's Madison's 21st birthday, so she's back home with the whole family to celebrate the big day with 3 pumpkin pies. Wow, you want some warm skim milk to wash down those snot consistency pies? Sounds like a real special day. Now, I struggle with Maddie because I used to really like her. She would stand up for herself. She was smart, had a life of her own. She wasn't afraid to speak her mind in front of her parents either. Remember, she was on student council or something? But now she's just dropped everything, except for her horrible headbands and choice of hairstyles. And she's married some shade of family relative. And she and her 30-year-old husband are pretending that they're these struggling law students, like they're preparing for the bar, when in actuality, neither of them have jobs. And they're probably holding down a whopping, 4 credit hours? So these two grifters are here for her birthday and to announce the pregnancy that Madison has been hiding-ish, because girl looks like she's 4 or 5 months pregnant already. Cody gifts them with some shiny CZ-encrusted watches with microscopic etching of the entire New Testament on it. I think that is some genius scam, because how is anyone going to know if the whole New Testament is really all there? It could just have a few books or readings from it or whatever is in the New Testament. And why do you need to carry that whole New Testament around all day, right? It's just a stupid gift. And by the way, why does Caleb need one too? It's Madison's birthday. Why is he getting a gift? Methinks Cody wants a new friend to wrestle with. Now, there's a lot of talk about Maddie and Kayla being evangelical Christians now, but the moms and dad are just happy that they have a strong faith in something. I wish Cody had just as strong a faith in learning how to brush his hair and choose clothing that doesn't look like he's 2 interventions away from being on Hoarders. That one episode where there was a lady living in the middle of the desert and she had this whole team of enablers, but they were all just using her to inherit her acreage in the desert. If you didn't see it, just trust me on it. Well, it's time for Maddie and Kayla to tell us something. Maddie unzips her hoodie that's been pulling across her expanding uterus all night. Surprise, baby on board sign. Everyone is all screaming and hugging, congratulations, except McKelty. The look on that brat's face. Madison was stealing her street taco thunder, and she was pissed. An interesting thing for McKelty to be upset about, considering she did the same thing when she announced her engagement to Tony during Madison's wedding, and then she wanted to have her own wedding like 2 hours later. You know where I think McKelty learned this selfish behavior? Cody. Because as everyone is hugging and congratulating the couple, Cody literally yells, "Hold on, hold on. Mom and I have known since September. I've known this whole time and I haven't even snipped." I think he meant slipped. And then he does this, "I'm a twee little girl," finger on his pursed lips. It was so gross. But good for Maddie. Everyone is there to share the good news except, you guessed it, Mary. Well, where was she? She was out of town for her, quote, online clothing business, which we all know is her multi-level marketing LuLaRoe shilling. And trust me, she is a miserable cow when she is hawking that god-awful, ugly crap during her online Facebook live sales. And so help me, if one of you tags me and gets me kicked out of that group, I will find you and send you more street tacos to stink up your house. I now actually look forward to someone posting in the orchard that she is live on Facebook, because it is an hour of her berating her customers and holding up the ugliest tarps of fabric in the most unflattering cuts and designs possible. Someone who hates women has clearly thrown together this concept because it's hideous. And if you're wearing it and people are telling you that you look good, that it looks good, I'm going to tell you from the safety behind this microphone, they're lying to you. That shit is overpriced and ugly. Take your hard-earned money and head to anywhere, Kmart, Walmart, Target, it doesn't matter. I will be your Dr. Drew LuLaRoe addiction specialist. Just that's it. Your fun's over. It's now time to detox, and you're going to create a new sober life with Mosimo and anything at JCPenney. Okay? Anything's better. So anyway, Mary is not with the family again because she's at this LuLaRoe jamboree, and they tell her that she's going to be a grandma. Mary's response, "Yay, congrats. It's exciting." Because just like McKelty, Mary isn't the center of attention. So briefly, Mary gets this 30 seconds of screen time to tell us that she's more independent because Mariah's at college and she just doesn't have kids at home. You know, besides the 15 or 17 kids that she spent 10 seasons telling us that they're all hers and they're all big one family, remember, multiplied by love. Well, even though the hickory-smoked cowardly lion is away, the other three wives are excited and talking about how old they're going to be when they're officially grandmas. Janelle's going to be 49, Christine will be 44, and Robin will be 38. Is she really only 38? Is it just that she dresses too old for her age, or is it just living with this family that rapidly ages a person? Okay, speaking of clothes, I don't think Janelle, Christine, or Robin wear LuLaRoe, do they? Like, I don't know too much about their line of clothing, but I think I would be able to spot it based on the fabric designs because they're pretty hard to miss. And I think it's because Mary, how much would you like to wager? She won't even give her sister wives a discount. I bet she charges them retail like everyone else. TC48, bin 33. Thank you, ma'am. Read the pin post, Robin. Oh my God. Okay, Jesus. I am on tangents today. My son was sick and I was up all night. So I am running on precisely 2 cups of coffee and 1 half-stale donut hole, which will clearly be responsible for another cellulite light dimple in, T-minus 2 hours. Ugh, the life of a supermodel, I tell ya. Well, now we get some shady, shady tomfoolery with Maddie and Caleb having to move back to Janelle's. Now, this is good news to Christine because she thinks if they move back, it'll mean the whole Brown family will be staying in Las Vegas. Turns out Cody and the rest of the family would actually like to move back to Utah because they don't have the same kind of church fellowship here in Las Vegas that they had in Utah, and they miss that. But Christine is pretty much refusing to leave. So we have Mary, who's already planned her exit, and Christine isn't going to be leaving Las Vegas. Robin and Cody want to go back to Utah. And Janelle, I think she's just going to stick around Cody until the kids are all grown and old enough. And then she's going to become Diane Keaton at the beginning of Baby Boom. Just let me have this little dream for Janelle because I think she deserves it. Okay, confession time. I had to check my little womanly cycle calendar app thingy because this next scene when Garrison came home, you guys, I was tearing up. I was near full out sobbing. I know he wasn't deployed, but anything with military or military adjacent coming home, I am a puddle on the floor, full on Nancy Kerrigan, ugly cry. And if it's a mom or dad surprising their kid at school, I mean, you may as well just commit me or inject me with a sedative or a Xanax elixir because I'm just inconsolable for hours. Now, Garrison's been gone at job training or boot camp or something for the last 4 months. He's currently in the National Guard, but he thinks he's just going to go full-time Army soon. They can't even think about the possibility of deployments. Neither can I. But I can think about why. After Cody saying Garrison has been eating military chow for 4 months, why would they think he'd be craving frozen burger patties and hot dogs? And I know those were not a good all-beef Hebrew National hot dog. In the great words of Dan Aykroyd to John Candy in The Great Outdoors, hot dogs, you know what those are made of, don't you, Chet? Lips and assholes. I guess the Browns love lips and assholes, though, because they are so excited to have 4 dozen of each to share. Garrison rolls up with Logan, who doesn't seem to want to be on camera this season, and he runs up to hug one of the brothers. Then he hugs Cody and Janelle. And I had tears in my eyes at this point, and my heart was softening for this family until all they had to do was walk in and make it inside, and I saw that motherfucking Brown family mission statement hanging on the wall. And I remember the torture they personally put me through that season. It was as if all these adults were editing an Encyclopedia Britannica with the research and the edits and the footnotes and the meetings. And you know what else snapped me to? Truly. As always, she's got to run in to steal the spotlight. And as Garrison's all cute, trying to hold baby Areola and hugging his sisters, Truly has to yell, "You look like you're bald." Seriously, Truly, you know, he was all worried about you when you were in the hospital. And this is how you do him. I think she's just bitter about being replaced by Solomon and Areola. Wait, what? What's that you say? Oh, Mary's not there. Where is Mother Mary? Oh, she was in her house working. Gigi Top 142, Bin 78. She must have missed the memo because she was there. Maybe if she read the pinned post, she would have known the entire family plus a camera crew were next door. You know who we haven't heard much from since she scammed her way to legal wife? Robin. Her only contribution this entire episode was to tell us Areola, who I now kind of want to call new Truly, is 10 months old. She's a terror at night, but she's cute during the day. And scene. That's all. Now, you would have thought a military homecoming was the high point of this episode, but no, because the wedding of the year is still in the works. The moms are practicing for this lip sync, Once again, the song choice of I Will Survive is quite possibly the worst song choice aside from Mystical's Shake Your Ass or Two Live Crew's Me So Horny, both of which would have brought the house down if we're going to be honest, because I know that Maria is a closet Two Live Crew fan. Well, blah, 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 Janelle about her being uncomfortable. Just get over it already. It's not like you're skydiving on The Amazing Race or bungeeing off Mary's Wet Bar. Christina's decided that she's going to pull the bio mom card and put herself front and center during the lip sync because she deserves that respect and so does McKelty. Okay, I agree, I guess. Us bio moms should all get to be head moron in our talent show lip syncing skits. Thanks for leading us in that bio mom's march, Christine. Now, during their last practice, we find out that Mary hasn't practiced or done anything at all to contribute because it's not about Mary or her wet bar. And she's just like, oh, my bad. I'm a bad, bad sister wife. No. How about you're a bad sister wife and a shitty mom to your pseudo daughter who you helped raise? You know, when Mary wants something like a fucking house in another state, everyone has to drop everything, drive out 4 hours to see it, support her in it, and she can't practice a couple spins and snaps and disco turns. She is such a selfish bitch. Well, I also hate her because she comes in and she has layered two long duster sweaters over one another, which is very LuLaRoe-ish, I am learning. They are big on this layering thing. And anyone with two brain cells can figure out it's because they want you to buy more stuff, not that it actually looks good. Robin and Janelle decide to wear wigs for some reason. Robin wants to keep hers. Let's not try to let our minds wander too far to wonder why. And Janelle puts hers on and she looks exactly like Tony. Had Janelle known that or have a mirror around, I don't think she would have agreed to wear it because I think Janelle is like us and she's the one that hates Tony the most. In a little moment of where are we going to change? We can't change in front of one another, even though they all watch each other give birth at their vagina hole at home. Okay, strange boundaries. We find out that Janelle went to a Korean bathhouse where everyone was naked. She claims she wore a shirt, but I don't know. Like, I just need to let this whole concept of her going to a Korean bathhouse ruminate for a while to really figure out what that was about. Now, fucking Truly butts her way into this rehearsal because of course she did. And I'm wondering what kind of lighting situation is up in Christine's kitchen because she has a full-size table lamp above her cabinets. Is this practical? Is it just a design choice? Is she using that space for extra storage? I couldn't take my eyes off the lamp, and now I am obsessed with it. Fast forward to the morning of the shower. It's finally here. Christine is making corn hot chocolate or something that smells worse than Tony. Aspen is actually the one to plan and throw this whole shower, and she's assigning everyone jobs. They're all nervous because they know Tony will just be comparing the shower to a Mexican bridal shower, and he's picky, so if the Mexican hot chocolate doesn't taste right, he's gonna tell them. But they love him. They just love Tony. They do. They really, really do. Throughout every scene, producers play mariachi music in the background. And this shower looks like the Cinco de Mayo aisle at Party City. They had a clearance special, and Aspen came a day late and just bought all the odds and ends of the shit that was left. Then there's a friend who was on the countertop with her gym shoes on. So absolutely disgusting. And also, when she's standing up there, she's standing on the overhang of the island. I was ready for that slab of granite just to snap right off. which maybe would have been a good thing because I would need to rip out and replace my counters after someone stood on them with their shoes. Finally, the shower is ready. And is it just me? Are they just taking every Latino stereotype and proudly piling it all in there? Just everything is so over the top. Mexican this, Mexican that. I mean, my sister married a guy from Costa Rica in Costa Rica, and we didn't string up the Costa Rican flag and cook rice and black beans and refer to ourselves as the white people when he was here. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're acting like they just found Tony's hidden tribe of indigenous people deep in the mountains of central Mexico, and they're trying to make them feel comfortable by integrating parts of their culture into their homes. It's bizarre. So Tony shows up at the shower around the dessert table, no surprise, and says, "Mom, look at all the desserts." Well, thank God Tony isn't sticking around for the whole shower. He was just there to give his Mexican stamp of approval, I guess. And he gives McKelty a kiss goodbye and then yells, "Did you get paint on me?" Tony will likely tell us that all white people call it lipstick and all Mexicans call it paint, right? Well, during the shower, everyone drinks the smelly hot chocolate, probably just to be polite, and they're also forced to play a crossword puzzle, which, number one, I hate party games, and number two, yeah, that must have just been a blast for half the people at the party who don't even speak English, let alone spell out words. Well, we get to hear about how McKelty and Tony met and fell in love again. As a reminder, they were playing Ultimate Frisbee. I mean, you might as well just say they met LARPing or playing Dungeons and Dragons because it's all the same to me. Then they played with some kids. Okay. And then Tony kissed her during a movie. Sounds like a true nightmare for this white girl. More producer-edited Mexican music plays while everyone's helping themselves to dessert and hot chocolate. Not even a meal, right? No savory food, nothing. You're just going to give me stinky hot chocolate and a sweet bun? Fuck off with that. I probably bought you a gift. And then McKelty gets books from her bridesmaids. This is really shaping up to be the weirdest wedding planning couple. I hope they don't reproduce, but if they do, the baby name and the shower will be epic. McKelty receives Sense and Sensibility, Taming of the Shrew. Apparently there's this whole inside joke with Mary, who cares? And then she gets a copy of 50 Shades of Grey. This is quite scandalous for the moms. Christine says she's read parts of it, but it's just not her genre. And then Janelle explains that it's about sex and bondage, and they all giggle and get uncomfortable. It's kind of interesting because I will bet any amount of money that Christine is one saucy little hornball with Cody. I just think she's got it in her. Finally, we get to the lip sync. Mary walks in a LuLaRoe maxi dress, which she has sewn into a jumpsuit. Now, I don't even have firm proof that it's LuLaRoe because I can just tell by the hideous print. It's pretty damn telling that this same fabric can be used as a tacky 70s costume and people are buying it. Even though they wanted a fog machine and lights, I would have too, to be honest, just because I could hide like gorillas in the mist style. The four moms dance their way in and make a complete fool of themselves. And then fucking Truly, once again, she's got to hop in there. I saw you. And I have a hard time believing Tony's family had never heard I Will Survive. But if they hadn't, they're probably wishing this wasn't the first time of them hearing it. Mother Maria gives McKelty lingerie. And yes, I do think it's a cultural thing. Maybe I'm wrong. And yes, I also agree with Janelle that they are all just prudes. Now to the scene which caused a spike in CVS's stock to go up last night because there was a nationwide rush for gauze pads. Christine's at the vocal coach again, practicing "Let Me Call You Sweetheart." I wanted to take that Swiffer mop resting behind the coach against the wall and whack Christine in the throat. If this is the symbol of "I'm sorry for my reaction to your engagement," I don't want to know what Christine's disapproval sounds like. She is singing at an octave that is so far above her range. I know zilch about music, but I know this isn't what singing is supposed to sound like. Like, having a visceral reaction to a song is not always a good thing. And not everyone has to be whatever scale of soprano is the highest one. I'm certain that Christine's grandpa was not singing in that key of "Ow, please make it stop" when he sang it to her grandma. And is this coach as good as Christine thinks? Because she's been to her 11 times. And the coach says to her, and I swear to you, this is a direct quote, "Yeah, it's out of tune. Yeah, you took a breath, but who cares?" I care. I paid you because I care. This is going to be fantastic and horrible all at the same time. Now, if this shower and singing and tacos were not enough, McKelty and Tony still want more. Always more. The piñatas are completed, and here they come. Standing at about 4 feet tall and proportionally correct, Christine has found someone to make these things. And in her words, McKelty's has green eyes, his brown eyes, all of it. That's pretty much the extent of the customization. Eye stickers. Tony's piñata must be filled with his Mexican candy. They're on strict orders. And all these candies have cayenne on it because Tony says that only McKelty's can have white people candy. Now, these two must really hate Christine because her duties are still not over. She's making the other brown daughters write things about love onto these mini Frisbees. Get it? Because they met playing Frisbee. And the officiant slash pawn shop owner guy is, quote, "going to talk about Frisbees eternally round and say beautiful things about the Frisbees." You know what? It's about damn time. 21st century, it's about time the Frisbees got their comeuppance. The plan for these Frisbees is to throw them on a perfect 45-degree angle arch over McKelty and Tony as they walk down the aisle. Because nothing can go wrong with 400 mini Frisbees from Oriental Trading Company flying into each other from all directions. And you know Tanya is going to be the one out there collecting all those little mini motherfuckers too. And while she's at it, she's probably been put in charge of Truly too, because Truly can help. For some reason, Christine is giving Tony a clotter ring with lots of CZs in it. I can't even wrap my mind around that, because next thing we know, Christine is in a puddle of tears because McKelty has requested her mom to now slice up her wedding dress to put in her Mexican antique theme bouquet. And it's not just Christine. McKelty has requested each of the other moms to give her something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. Now, I'd be fucking pissed if I was the one that got the new category, which means I hope she gave that one to Mary. Now, I feel bad for Christine and her dress. She clearly doesn't want to do it. But the plus side is that we got to see Cody's reaction to Christine. And it was, I can't believe I'm actually saying this, it was kind of sweet how Cody was with her. Like, they seemed genuinely flirty and happy with one another. And he was saying how much thinner she looked. And I don't even care if that alluded to her being heavier before, because you know what? If someone tells me, "Oh yeah, you look really thin," I'm taking the compliment. Now, they're laughing and joking about how ugly the dress was, which it was. It was bad. Worse than Anna Duggar bad. And then Christine slips that Cody carried her across the threshold. But Cody says he's not going to talk about carrying other wives over the threshold. You guys, does that mean he couldn't and therefore didn't carry Janelle across? Because now I feel bad for Janelle that she's going to know this. She's going to have seen the episode. "No one carried me either, Janelle. At least you're not wearing a LuLaRoe Misty or Carmen or something, right?" Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Next week, it looks like, gee whiz, Mary changes her mind and maybe that house is really just for her side of the family. And maybe Cody doesn't love Mary anymore. Shocking. Okay, next up, seeking sister wife. All right, guys, do you follow iMom So Hard? If you don't, you are missing out. It's a hilarious web series where two best friends, Kristen and Jen, who happen to be moms, talk about the funny shit about being a woman and motherhood. I almost spit out my Pinot when they talked about preparing for their annual pap smear. Spot on. Well, they are taking it to the stage in I Mom So Hard Live. They're going to be at the Silver Legacy Casino in Reno, Nevada on Saturday, March 3rd. Tickets start only at $39.50. If you go to silverlegacy.com, you can make a weekend out of it. You get 20% off a hotel room that night of the show if you use code TICKS18 with that show ticket. Why wouldn't you go? Afterwards, you can stop at the Sister Wives cul-de-sac, pick up a little LuLaRoe, My Sister Wives Closet stuff. Again, go to silverlegacy.com, use code TICKS18, and get 20% off your room that night with purchase of your show ticket. Go ahead, have fun. First up, we have the Snowdens from Atlanta. Dimitri and Ashley have created their online profile, and they found a potential match in a woman named Jocelyn. Jocelyn's 22, a flight attendant, and wants to go on to get her PhD. Sounds like the perfect fit for a family that needs help with their kids because they want a community. A community who they themselves said would mean another person to help take the strain off of them to do it all. Yeah, anyone else seeing a conflict of time and interest? But all that aside, Ashley and Dimitri have set up a date to Skype with Jocelyn together. They ring her up, and it appears Jocelyn's just walking around her apartment or hotel room. She's easy, breezy, and it goes without saying that she is clearly stunning. So Dimitri asks her what was it about them that attracted her to their profile. In a nutshell, she thought they were an attractive couple. She really doesn't care what other people might say about the polygamous lifestyle, and she tends to date older, so the age difference between herself and them, which is about 15 years, doesn't concern her. Dimitri is all aboard, of course, because she's gorgeous and young, but Ashley has doubts because of her age. Me too. Fast forward to baby Neo or Zio or Xenu something's birthday, and Ashley's mom and sister are coming over. She's nervous to tell them because they were suspicious with the first wife that they took on last year, and that indeed did end badly, so she's a little nervous this time. Once we meet Sister Chanel and Ashley's mom, I knew I needed to listen to what they were saying because they are like a supermodel family, and there was a slight chance they might drop some skincare regimen tips. Nikki from 90 Day Fiancé is the single solitary missing piece that could add to this family in order to take those Hadid sisters down. They are stunning. Ashley tells Chanel about their plans, and she's supportive. And now comes a time when we need to tell Mother Ashley. Mother Ashley, I think she's a good mom. She says, "What hurts you hurts me, but this is your life. You a queen, he a king. And when you have your own castle, you make your own decisions. You do you, and who am I to judge?" I loved that because I would like to think I would be the same way. Is this something I would ever choose? Never. But if you're not hurting anyone and you're a contributing member to society and you're taking quality care of your kids, who am I to be your judge and jury? Moving westward to the Aldridges of Utah. Jeff, Charisse, and Vanessa are still on that Skype call with Melina, and she's about to drop a bombshell. Turns out she can't have kids, so she won't be adding to the family in that way. The pioneer woman feels badly for her because her uterus is always full of babies and she can't imagine having it empty. And in a surprising twist, they don't care at all and they aren't interested in adding more kids to their celestial kingdom. I don't know if that's right, but it sounded really good, didn't it? And they said that we've got piles of kids. We won't hold that against you as we move forward. And the pioneer woman says that she thinks that she can still contribute to the family in other ways. What, like babysitting or housekeeping and cooking? Because let's be honest, that's what we're talking about here, right? Like, why not just find a friend for free or a babysitter? And Jeff has this really dry lip on the left side that just his lips stick together. Is it like a lip muscle issue or does he just need Carmex? It drives me crazy. Well, you know this family is boring when Jeff's lazy lip and a walk around the block is the best we get. But alas, P-Dubs, that's Pioneer Woman, gets a date alone with Jeff and a kid in a stroller. Oh, wow, what a night. And they decide that they just need to have Melina come to Utah to meet them so they can get a good feel for her. Charisse is more excited about this because she has made more of a connection with Melina over the last several months. Vanessa hasn't had that chance yet because apparently she's been really sick with her pregnancy. Now, I have a theory, as I always do. I think Charisse is pushing this match specifically because she is the link. I think this gives her a little power in the family, especially because she's second wife. She's already got that instant friend in Melina, which means it's automatically going to be like Charisse and Melina against Vanessa, like a power shift. All right, so they ring Melina and her cats up to meet the children. That was weird. And the kids themselves ask her if she likes kids. And she says, yes, because they're like little humans. Oh, well, this is going to be a shit show, isn't it? This trip out to Utah is really just to see if Melina gets Jeff's ding-dong hard, right? Because otherwise, she seems like she has nothing to offer this family. On to the clear stars of the show, the Briney family, also from Utah. Drew and Angela are in Angela's cell, and they're playing with baby Donatello da Vinci, or whatever his name is. And Angela's kind of having a hard time adjusting, going from living alone to living in a house with a bunch of other kids, two wives, a husband with Ken Kratz's soft voice, and his three strands of greasy strawberry blonde hair, and Drew's mandals. I saw them, strappy man sandals with Velcro. Now, the core of this episode for the Brineys is the fact that they cannot live as open polygamists. They want to, but Utah law prohibits it. Angela meets up with Orly in the master bedroom, you know, the one that April got kicked out of. Karma. And she tells Orly that she met the neighbors across the street, and she's worried about being exposed or even ostracized, sent to jail for being polygamist. Not that I like that, but I liked this scene because it seemed like Angela and Orly were bonding. These two seem very compatible. They're both recently postpartum with small infants, and they both seem fairly reasonable. And they also share the fear of not being legal wives with Drew. April cannot relate. Orly thinks coming forward will shatter the prejudice and they can become free. In a very telling statement, she says April doesn't understand the depths, neither do her children. They will not experience the prejudice or ramifications of being found out like she or Angela would. And I guess in the past, Orly said that her kids couldn't even play in the front yard like April's kids would, and that they felt like second-class citizens even in the home. That's some bullshit right there. If April had a heart, she would have told her kids that Arlie's kids were their siblings and they need to stick together and they all should have played in the backyard together, not leave some of them out. Cut to the scene at the kitchen table. Say what you will about Cody Brown, but he's not holding hands and kissing one of his wives in front of the others. The way Drew and April were holding hands was weird, disrespectful, and totally passive aggressive. If I were him, thank God I'm not, I would be sitting on my hands until I was alone with a wife that night. He's just contributing to that angst between the wives. While they all want to move out of Utah, they can't because Drew still has some cases to wrap up because, just like Star Jones, he's a lawyer. They're just going to have to come up with a cover story in the meantime. That bums Arlie out because she was hoping this move to the big house would allow them to be more open and honest. Angela isn't quite where Arlie is because she's afraid she's going to go to jail and her son is going to be sent to foster care. Then April has to open her stay sweet mouth and say, if it were up to me, we would be open, come what may, but I'm not the one at risk. And aside to the producer, she says, I'm the only one that legally has Drew's name. I can't help it if I married him first. She's a monster disguised in Aussie sprunch spray. Arlie is about to WWE April's ass and says, April doesn't have as much at stake. To which a very well-prepared, seems like just waiting for Arlie to say this someday, April says, sure I do. Drew is my husband. And then she caresses his arm and pulls herself in. Now, there cannot be an April cheering section, right? Like, we're all on team Arlie and Angela so far, correct? It's decided that Arlie is going to have her cover story being the visiting aunt, and Angela is going to be the nanny. While they're using these cover stories now, the whole reason that they're doing this is they're hoping to inspire more polygamous families to open up, show people that they're normal, and then they can work on changing the law so that they can live in peace and harmony like everyone else. The scene with them telling the kids how to respond to questioning by neighbors or the school and not calling them mom or dad, that was horrible. No family should have to have a conversation like that, and I feel terribly for those kids. It has got to be horrifyingly scary, and I feel like it sends a mixed message, and I'm not necessarily faulting polygamous parents for having to have those conversations, but it's kind of endorsing keeping secrets. I don't know. Now, we're all entitled to our opinions, right? So I'm going to tell you mine, and you are welcome to agree or disagree. I don't know why it makes me uncomfortable that some of these sects of religion or faith groups seem to be piggybacking onto the marriage equality movement. I know some of you feel similarly. I believe people should marry who you want to marry, sleep who you want to sleep with. It's your life, not mine. As long as kids or innocent men and women are not being made to marry someone that's chosen for them, then do whatever you want if you truly have free will. It doesn't make a difference to me when I wake up in the morning or lay my head down at night. But if they are faith groups that want to ride on the coattails of marriage equality, but on the same hand discriminate against certain groups like the LGBT community, I do see some of that hypocrisy or opportunism that people are talking about. Does that make any sense? Now, I don't know if these families' beliefs are that. So I'm not saying any family in particular here. I'm just saying my opinion on the issue in a general sense. All right, I'll hop off my soapbox and let's wrap this puppy up. Thanks for listening. And as always, find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at RealityVPod, and bonus episodes are on patreon.com/RealityVPod. All of those are in the show notes. Just click on them. I'll talk to you tomorrow with a recap of Teen Mom OG. In the meantime, make sure your tacos aren't burning today and stay salty.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.